This is Bounded Top Atari 8-Bit Podcast.
In this interview episode of Antic, the Atari 8-Bit Podcast, I interview Paul Lofton. Paul wrote some programs you might have heard of. Paul wrote Apple DOS 3.1. He wrote Atari Basic. And he also wrote the file system handling routines on the Atari. He's also one of the co-founders of Optimize System Software, which is the company that brought us Basic XL and Action and lots of other good stuff. I conducted this interview with him on September 5th, 2014, over Skype. The Skype connection was a little flinky here and there, but good enough. So in case you missed the announcement, what we're doing for a while, at least on this podcast, is we're doing the interviews separately as separate interview episodes. We're going to do one or two a week until we get through the massive backlog of great interviews that we've done. And the regular monthly episodes are going to be pretty much the same, except without interviews. We'll use that time for other things. Okay, so here is Paul Lofton. So yeah, I'm excited to talk to the person who pretty much coded Atari Basic. Is that right?
That is correct. I did most of the work. My wife did the decimal math routines.
Mm-hmm. She's Kathleen, right?
Yes.
You and Kathleen still together?
Yes, we are. She's a computer science professor at San Jose State these days.
Awesome. I'm not sure where to begin, except Atari Basic is a program that, every Atari 8-bit user in history has used. It's probably the first program they see, if not. And so it's kind of a seminal part of everything. And can you tell me a little bit about? I've read the story in the Atari Basic source book of how you got the contract and everything, but how do you go about starting just going from nothing? Oh, here's this computer that's not even out yet, and we want you to write a language for it. Go do that. Thanks.
Well, I'll give you a little bit of prehistory before Atari came and asked for a Basic.
Mm-hmm.
I had been contracted through Shepardson Microsystems to write a BASIC for Apple. They were planning on coming out with a product called Apple Annie, which was going to have a BASIC and a cartridge. And I was contracted to write that BASIC. At some point, I got delayed writing the Apple DOS, and then they canceled the contract. So I had a BASIC shell for a BASIC created when Atari came along.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically started with that, the work that I have been doing for Apple.
Okay. So it wasn't the first time you'd thought about this sort of problem.
Well, I had worked for almost 10 years for IBM Service Bureau Corporation and on a project called Call 360, Call 370. It was a time-sharing system where you had terminals in your home or business and you could write basic PL1 or Fortran programs. So I worked on all aspects of Call 360, including the basic for it.
Cool.
And I had written a number of various kinds of compilers for Call 360.
Did Atari ask you, did they want specifically ask you for things that graphics commands and sound and things that would bring out the power of their particular hardware, or is that something that you felt you needed to do, or was that part of the spec?
Well, there was never really a spec written for Atari Basic. I'm not even sure I ever saw a contract for it. It was all done mostly, I think, on a handshake. They wanted interfaces to their graphics and sound, and so I provided that. they didn't specify what it would look like or anything like that.
Hmm. How long did it take?
Well, given that I had a head start, probably a month's head start in how planning out the BASIC and starting to write the BASIC syntaxer. So I think it was October when Atari came to us, and we had it available in January, as I recall. I think Bill Wilkins' history gives the actual timeline. And it was written on the Apple II.
Wow. So you wrote it on the Apple II, and then you moved it to real hardware to test, or could you actually run it on the Apple II at some point?
I created dummy interfaces, and then when the hardware was available, I started going over to Atari to do testing.
Hmm. Wow.
I also had to test the file management system at the same time.
So yeah, you also created that simultaneously, is that right? More or less?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So when you say the file management system, from a user perspective, is that like basically the DOS.sys file?
Yes. Yeah, I'm not even sure then I called it a DOS, because a DOS is much more than just a file management system.
Right.
And what I created was a file management system.
So you didn't do the menu interface that we call the DOS, where you can copy files and things. It was more of the
I think I actually did that. When I think of an operating system, it not only includes things like a disk, but putting information on the screen, reading the keyboard, serial interfaces, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so a complete operating system has all those things, and the file management system basically manages the files on a disk.
Right. Okay, so I'll ask you, why 8.3 file names? Why no lowercase?
Why no lowercase? I really don't remember. Did the Atari do lowercase at the time?
Well, the Atari could, but not in file names.
Okay.
File names are case insensitive.
Probably because it was easier and it needed to be got done quickly.
Okay. Fair enough. I was just thought I'd ask. So you had also done Apple DOS before that, correct?
That's correct.
So like DOS 1.0 on the Apple II?
Well, I think they called it DOS 3.1 when they released it.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome. So were you still involved at that point? When they came up with DOS 3.3, had Apple taken over at that point, or were you still working on...
Actually, after the initial release, I gave the source code to a guy named Vic Houston, and I was never involved again.
Hmm. Walk away.
Walk away.
Right. All right, so when you were doing the Atari file system and the Atari BASIC, you were at a company called SMI, is that right?
It was called Shepperton Microsystems Incorporated.
Okay. And then eventually you ended up at OSS.
Well, sometime in 1980, maybe, I actually went to work for Atari.
Mm-hmm.
I became the manager of the operating systems group for the home computer.
So how did that come about? How did you end up with that in that position?
Atari made me an offer I couldn't refuse. At the time, I was getting very good pay being a contractor. And I really didn't want to go to work for somebody, but they made me an offer I couldn't refuse, so I went there.
How long were you an Atari employee?
For maybe a year and a half.
And?
And then my manager at Atari, a guy named Lou Tarnay, went to a company called Fox Video Games. Mm-hmm. And he invited me to come along, and I invited six members of the team to come along. And so we all went to Fox Video Games.
Okay. So let's talk about that year and a half at Atari. What did you say your title was?
It was manager, let's see, it was first manager of system software in the home computer division, and then it was manager of software development, including applications and everything else.
Okay. So what did you do on a day-to-day basis in that time?
Managed teams of programmers. We did things like updating the BASIC. We were working on a debugger for the assembler editor. We created, I think it was the 5200, the next generation home computer. We were working on the operating system for that. And then there were other applications that were being developed as we went along.
Cool. So, yeah, the 5200 was a game system.
Okay.
A keyboard. So
there was a follow-on product after the 400-800.
Right. The XL series.
XL, that would be it, yeah.
Okay.
And so we worked on things like, well, for example, marketing wanted a help key on that system. And no software had any interfaces to a help key. So what we did was, if you didn't have any cartridges in it and pressed the help key, it would run a self-test. Mm-hmm. And whenever you saw an XL in a store, what you saw was it running that self-test.
So it said on your webpage, kind of jumping around here a little bit, it said Kathleen, your wife, single-handedly wrote the code for the Atari Assembler Editor cartridge.
That's correct. She actually took the basic source code and transformed it into an assembler editor. This was doable because the syntax that I wrote was written, do you know what BNF is, Backus Normal Form?
No, I don't.
It is a way of describing a syntax for a language. It was created by a guy named Backus for use with the development of Fortran. And I used it to describe the syntax for BASIC, and actually created a macro compiler that would transform the BNF into a syntax. Mm-hmm. If you read it inside Atari BASIC, it tells more about it. Anyway, she transformed that into the assembler editor.
That's incredible.
Yeah, she's quite a gal.
Did she get to lord it over you that you got to write the high level language, but she got to write the assembly editor?
No, we don't have that kind of relationship.
Oh, good.
we're partners.
Awesome. So tell me a story about working at Atari. What was interesting about it?
Well, during the time I worked at Atari, there was a transformation. One of the things that brought me to Atari was that in the home computer division, they hired a very senior and respected software vice president, a guy named Bruce Irvine. Mm-hmm. They also had a senior PhD type as president, a guy named Roger Badisher. And that staff actually made me attractive to Atari. They seemed like a very, very professional organization. And so I wanted to work for them. Over time, things changed. Roger Badisher decided that he wanted to start a IBM PC clone company called Mindset. Mm-hmm. So he and Bruce Irvine left. and they were replaced by friends of Kassar, Ray Kassar, who was the president. The software vice president became a 24-year-old kid named Chris Horseman, who had absolutely no experience managing software development. And so the very reasons that I went there disappeared. And so I left. There was also some interesting things going on with the games division. The programmers being withheld their bonuses. Ray Kassar saying that games developers were nothing but a bunch of high-paid prima donnas. And when he said that in a local newspaper, a friend of mine created a T-shirt that's soon spread around Atari that said, "You're nothing but a high-paid prima donna."
I've heard that story. That's incredible.
A guy named Mike Alba created that. I work with Mike Alba now at the Computer History Museum.
I have I've talked to Mike. Yeah. So that means you're in the Bay Area and you volunteer at the Mountain View. It's in Mountain View, right?
Yeah. Mike and I both do the demonstrations on the IBM 1401.
Cool. So at what point did you end up at Optimize System Software?
Well, actually, OSS was formed while I was still at Atari. And Bill Wilkinson and Mike, I can't remember his name, and my wife and I kind of formed the company together. We incorporated it together. I got permission from my manager at Atari to do it. So I was actually still working there. And however, my involvement became pretty much, I was working a whole lot and didn't have time. So Kathy and I pretty quickly bowed out of formal OSS involvement. And eventually they bought us out. While we were there, we did the Inside Atari Basic and the file management book. Mike Peters was the guy's name.
So when you left Atari, you went to a video game company, you said?
Yeah, Fox Video Game. It was a video games created by 20th Century Fox. And their objective was really to take Fox properties and make video games, things like MASH and Attack of the Killer Tomatoes and things like that.
So what'd you do there?
I was the director of software development. I had a team of, diverse team of engineers and graphics artists and sound engineers, and we tried to develop games for many machines at once. So we developed a game concept and do it on the 2600, the 400, 800, the Commodore, the TI. Pretty much covers it, I guess. And Fox Video Games was losing money. They produced more cartridges for a game than they could possibly ever sell. And when it got up to $18 million, Fox canceled the project.
Well, there seemed to be a lot of that going around back then.
Oh, yeah, there were lots of game companies flooding the market.
Yeah.
Including Atari.
Do you still own an Atari machine?
No, I don't. Been a long time since I've owned one. A few years ago when I was working as a volunteer at the Tech Museum, they had a silent auction and I bought one and brought it home. This was around 2000-2001. Played with it for a while and then gave it away.
Don't feel any real nostalgia for it? It was just a a work project and that's it, or?
Yeah, I kind of like my notebook computers and Adrenos and things like that these days. I did at one time make a robot using an Atari 400. I used it to drive the motors that drove the robot and to program it and run it around with a joystick.
Oh, neat. Was this just a personal project or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, I've still got the base for my robot here in my garage. There's nothing to drive it with.
Well, that's what I was going to add. Speaking of things in your garage, as part of what I'm doing, in addition to the interviews, is I am working with archive.org, and we're trying to save as much computer history as possible. And I'm particularly interested in the Atari stuff. So my question to you is, do you have anything that hasn't been published or made available around, you know, source code or apps, programs, disks that might not have seen the light of day or might have gotten lost over the years?
No, I don't. I don't think I have any remnants of Atari, and the major things that I did, like the file management system and the BASIC, have been published.
Right. Yeah. Which is amazing. I mean, I thought it was amazing then, and it's amazing now that could happen. Oh yeah, here's the source code to this R language. Here's, you know.
Yeah. Well, Shepperton SMI retained the rights of the source code for it, and Bob Shepperton transferred the rights to Bill, and Bill at OSS,
mm-hmm.
and so he was able to publish them.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, it's no more amazing than Microsoft retained the rights to MS-DOS when they did it for IBM.
I guess so. I guess you're right. Yeah. That worked out well for them.
Very well indeed.
If you could send a message to the Atari computing community that still exists, and you can right now, what would you tell them?
What would I tell them? That one of the highlights of my career was the software that I did for Atari. And not only was it a highlight in terms of it was just a fun project, but in terms of the contract, it was very lucrative. I think I ended up with a $10,000 bonus. And that was back in 1979, so that was a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That was the bonus that was kind of alluded to on the website for getting it done early?
Yes. Another interesting tidbit, I don't know if it's who would be interested, but I'll tell you. The manager who hired me at Atari,
mm-hmm.
He at the time was the manager, and I was hired as a senior engineer. That manager is Kathleen O'Brien's ex-husband, a guy named Brian Johnson. And Brian and I are still good friends today.
That's kind of amazing. That's cool. Looking through my list here, see if I have any other questions. Frankly, I'm just fishing for stories about writing BASIC and about working at Atari and that sort of thing. So I'm open to, you know, just anything.
Well, one of the things that while I was going over to Atari and doing testing, I was talking, the guys that were working with me were the same ones that went off the forum, I think it was Activision.
Okay.
And they were complaining at the time that they had been promised a bonus. But Ray Kassar withheld the bonus because the company, he produced a whole bunch of 2600 machines that didn't get sold for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
So he withheld the bonus because the company lost money that year. In January, they sold all those machines and became very profitable. And these guys were very, very angry. And they were all good 2600 programmers, so what they did was decide to go off and form Activision.
Mm-hmm. David Crane and those guys, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I ended up with all their engineering notebooks looking through it to see if they stole anything from Atari.
So, okay, you were manager in the computing realm at Atari. I mean, was there drama like that you had to deal with?
Not until Bruce Irvine and Badisher left, and then when Chris Horstman came along, it became an Italian fire drill.
I've talked to several people who have said something similar. Like, they got there, and it was one thing, and then the environment completely changed over time as management changed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I don't know if it's relevant, but I went on to do voicemail in the 80s.
Yeah.
And in the 90s, I worked for Logitech and developing digital cameras. I was project manager for the first consumer digital camera. And then in conjunction with Logitech and Kodak, I was the project manager for Kodak's first consumer digital camera. So I ended my career on digital cameras.
Excellent. And today, you said you volunteer at the Computer History Museum.
Yes.
What else do you do to keep yourself busy?
Well, I'm a amateur radio operator, and so I play with radios. Today are what they call software defined.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that stuff that used to be in a radio is now done in software. And so I play around with that.
I'd been familiar with SDR. I'm a ham too. I'd been familiar with SDR for a while, but recently I went to a conference and they had, I guess I didn't realize that you could buy an SDR on a USB stick now for $20, and it came with an antenna, and I bought one, and it's just been so fun. It just seems like magic, frankly, to me, that a radio can tune into multiple frequencies at the same time. You can just see the whole spectrum. And
yeah, I've got one of those also. The USB dongle.
Yeah.
And I have a SDR transceiver. It's a Flex 1500.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it. Every time I think about getting another rig, I think, wow, this does everything that a $3,000 rig does.
Right. I mean, there's something, I mean, I always love looking at the ham rigs that are, you know, those big transceivers with the big dials and buttons and stuff, and it's just like, it completely hardly necessary anymore when you can just do it on a laptop.
Yeah, exactly. I do all my transceiving from a laptop.
I thought of another question about Atari Basic. So getting back to the day of Atari Basic, did you ever hear from end users? Did you ever get, you know, fan mail or people writing to you about bugs, or did that just all go to Atari? And
well, actually, a lot of it went to Bill Wilkinson.
Mm-hmm.
Because not only did he create OSS and follow on products, but he was a monthly author for Compute Magazine.
Right.
So he had a regular Atari column, and a lot of questions and so forth went to him.
Sure, more of a public face.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So, you know, I very seldomly hear from people about Atari Basic.
Do you hear from people about Apple DOS?
Yes, I do. Particularly in the last year or so, because the Computer History Museum did a oral history
mm-hmm.
on Apple DOS, and I had a listing, and we went over the listing together and so forth. And then the first thing that came out was an article about the unknown $13,000 disk operating system. And that got a lot of attention. A lot of people in my neighborhood read it. So That was quite well known.
Are you familiar with a conference called Kansas Fest?
Kansas Fest? No, I'm not.
It occurs every summer. It's an Apple II conference, and I've gone 2 years in a row, and there's like 50 to 60 people there who are really into the Apple II. It's at Rutgers University every year, and I bet they would love to hear what you have to say.
Kansas Fest. I'll look that up. And
yeah, Kansas Fest, it's in Kansas City, Missouri.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, I'm sure they would just adore having you there next summer.
Well, I just looked it up in my notebook and didn't save it.
Well, I recently discovered that someone had, years ago, it's just a new discovery to me, made something called, I think it was called Turbo Basic, for the Atari, and it was fully compatible with Atari Basic, yet they added a bunch of commands, like for drawing circles and doing quick fills and this and that, and it was faster, and you could compile it very easily, and had a bunch of neat features, but it was really cool because it was completely backwards compatible with your language, so.
Interesting. It would be interesting to see the internal design of that. If they picked up on my syntaxer or went in a completely separate way. I guess another interesting fact is that several years ago, I wrote a BASIC that runs on Android. And, you know, I kind of advertised it as the author of Atari BASIC. Create basic in Android. And it's had 70,000 downloads. It's free and open source. And right now I do very little work on it, but there's several other guys that continue to work on it. So I kind of look at it as reliving my youth writing that basic.
Right. Awesome. So do you program in BASIC anymore, even on your Android?
Well, when I was heavily working on it, I created a lot of sample programs.
Sure.
BASIC would be delivered with about 40 sample programs that demonstrated various features. So I did a lot of programming there, but not a whole lot these days.
So on the Atari BASIC, was there any features that you were just like, really wanted to add some cool thing that you thought should have been there but you couldn't do, or that you tried to do and didn't work out?
No. They're basically, what I put in was what I wanted to put in, and then there wasn't much space left over for anything else.
So who else worked on it? You said Kathleen did the floating point?
Yeah, Kathleen did the decimal floating point.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important to know that decimal. And I guess that was it. After it was taken over by Atari, a guy named Lane Winter that worked on it.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, for OSS, I did a language called Prolog, which they sold the minimal copies of.
Prolog for the Atari?
Prolog for the Atari, yeah.
I don't think I'm aware of that. I mean, when I think of OSS, I think of Basic A+ and Action and things like that. I know a little bit about Prolog. I read a couple of books about it for the IBM, you know, PC in the 90s. Was it basically compatible with that same sort of language?
Yeah, well, it was compatible to the language Prolog. I mean, it had special functions in it to do graphics and things like that, but it was basically a standard Prolog language.
Wow. Okay.
I think there was another Prolog written for the Atari 800 besides the Prolog.
Because you need a lot of you need competition in the busy Prolog programming space.
Yeah, if you look up maybe OSS Prolog,
All right. I'll have to research this later. Interesting. I guess that's about all I have. Thank you very much.
You're welcome very much. And interesting reminiscing.
Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.